Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire Internet Soccer Show, CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, Week 4, as we take a look at the teams from Major League Soccer, as well as those that are affiliated with the U.S., with the territory of the U.S. And once again, interesting stuff going on with the CONCACAF Champions League. Seattle Sounders, they are the first team from MLS to qualify into the group stage. Out of the group stage into the knockout round, into the quarterfinals. So it's really fun to see that happening. But you're a little worried if you're a supporter of Real Salt Lake, to be honest. That road match, and look, don't get me wrong, you know, Jason Kreis has to do what he's got to do to get a result, and I understand that. I completely understand what Jason Kreis has to do to get a result. But while they got lucky that there was a brain fart by Taro to get that penalty, did you feel they deserved to win the match? I just felt that maybe that was a little bit of a lackluster effort. I'm not saying that they didn't want to win. Of course they want to win. But did it just look like to me that maybe, just maybe, that the effort wasn't there? That maybe they thought that they were going to get a draw out of this? And at the same time, when the tournament is no longer four groups of four, with the top two moving on to the quarterfinals, points, you know, forget about the points. I mean, you drew there with Taro. You secede the top spot to Herediano from Costa Rica. Now, thankfully for Real Salt Lake, they got the penalty call. Thankfully for Real Salt Lake, they were able to salvage three full points. I can't feel confident about a side right now like Real Salt Lake that were in danger. And I'm talking about major danger of being eliminated if they would have drawn that match. I mean, if they lost, you already knew it was over. But the draw did not help them. And I don't think Herediano is going to take Taro FC lightly on Saturday, September 25th, which is a Tuesday. I don't think you're going to see, look, league play, we know what Jason Kreis is going to do in league play. But this is important. I mean, this is such an important match that for some strange reason, Salt Lake just didn't seem to be themselves. I don't know why. I don't know how. I don't know the reason for it. We'll find out when Christopher Enger calls in from the RSL show, and he'll probably give me maybe a better take of what he saw. But from what I saw, I think they got lucky that there was a brain fart in the Taro FC area. And, of course, playing at the National Stadium down in Panama, I just got a funny feeling that it was just one of those events or one of those games where maybe they thought all hope was lost. I don't want to think that, but for some strange reason, it just didn't seem like they were doing themselves any favors. It just looked like the runs didn't have any purpose in them. And you'd like to think that for Salt Lake, that's not the case. But it almost became like that. And instead of penciling in a 1-0 victory for Salt Lake in the schedule of Group B, it almost looked like a draw. 0-0 draw. Because Taro knew they were done. there's no way Taro is ever going to come back because they know that Herediano is probably going to take him out. Now, what does this say for the next match for Salt Lake? Because they will be facing Herediano anyway at Rio Tinto Stadium. Very simple. Whatever happens on the 25th is out of their control. They can hope for a draw or a win by Taro FC of Panama. And then that sets up a pretty spicy and delectable final group stage match in B between Real Salt Lake and Herediano. This is really interesting what's going on. And it's just one of those moments where you're saying to yourself, maybe Salt Lake doesn't deserve to go ahead. But they got their goal off the penalty. And we'll talk more about Real Salt Lake with Christopher Enger of the RSL show. When you look at the match between the Galaxy and the Puerto Rico Islanders, I mean, we already know Puerto Rico is probably going to be eliminated from competition. They're already eliminated anyway from this match. I mean, the draw did not help them. But you would like to think maybe from these three games so far from Puerto Rico, you would probably have to say they feel better about themselves. I mean, you don't like to have a scoreless draw at home, but at the same time, when you're facing a good team like the Galaxy, it just seemed to be that, or it seemed to me that, for the Islanders, you know, they really needed the win to at least threaten LA. But once again, this eliminates them from group stage, and now they can concentrate on the NASL League in the second division. But it's really not cut and dry on how these things happen in CONCACAF Champions League. Once again, it's no longer four groups of four. It's now eight groups of three. Goal differential plays a big role in these games. Goal differential plays a huge role in these games besides the points. Because now what you're seeing is something very interesting, and once again, it's just very amazing to see how these things happen. I will say this, though. Very nice to see Landon Donovan getting back out there. I think it was also interesting that Robbie Keane did not play, that David Beckham didn't play. But it was nice seeing Landon Donovan going out there, subbing in, putting on a show for the fans of the Puerto Rico Islanders. And it's just a good thing to see Landon Donovan actually getting back on the field and actually looking pretty good. We'll see what happens in the next group stage match. At the same time, we'll see what Landon Donovan is going to do with the Galaxy in league play in MLS. Moving on here in the CONCACAF Champions League, the Seattle Sounders. Is it possible that the referees can stop awarding penalties to the Sounders' opponents? Because it looks like that's the only way these two sides are going to get a goal on Seattle. If it's either Caledonia or it's Club Deportivo Marathon. Two penalties for Marathon converted both. But you wonder, you really wonder, you know, is it something that the Sounders did that got these referees to hand over penalties to their opponents? Like, you know, like there's no tomorrow. I mean, in these three games, a grand total of four penalties. The home game against Caledonia, the road game against Caledonia, and the two on the road against Marathon. And the second penalty was really questionable in that game. I have never seen anyone stay on their feet, turn around and then fall down. And you award a penalty on that? Look, I'll give them the first one because maybe it did look like it was a real penalty because Gsperning left his right leg out there. But to be fair, that second call, that was really, really suspect. Because I didn't see him get brought down. I think he fell on his own. He turned around, he fell down on his own, and then there's the penalty. I mean, for goodness sakes, this is ridiculous. And once again, if you want to say CONCACAF refereeing, I mean, that's the norm now, isn't it? Well, how come this play stunk, huh? CONCACAF refereeing. Okay, I got it. I mean, it's weird. Absolutely weird. I just never, ever understood all that. It's crazy. It's like the referees have the mind of their own of what should or shouldn't be called. But good for the Sounders. They were able to score three goals. Marathon gets two penalties. So you say to yourself, what's better? During the run of play or at the spot? You never thought that was going to happen. You thought, I don't know. It just seemed to be that the referee wanted to intentionally give Marathon a draw. And when Seattle got their third, I think the referee left. That said, I can't help you guys anymore. I don't want to accuse referees of cheating. I don't want to accuse referees of making these baloney calls just to help out and say, well, we don't want the Americans to do anything or the American teams to do anything. But the point is, what do you expect us to think? I mean, it's just really, really difficult to watch this match. And you say to yourself, did that really get called? Is that really what we're expecting? I don't know. But one thing is for sure. The Sounders, give them credit. They found a way to avoid any letdown. They kept on attacking. They kept on getting better. They kept on doing things the right way. And they won. And right now, they are the first team in the group stage from MLS to move on to the knockout stages. So right now, they're the first team. They've played three games, 9 points. The other two teams in Caledonia and with Marathon, they both have a point. So, you know, give credit to Seattle. They did what they had to do. And now they're moving on to the knockout stages for the 2013 calendar, and we'll wait for the draw once all 6 weeks or all six rounds have been played. And we'll see who's going to be drawn with whom in the quarterfinals. Hopefully it will be very quickly when the draw does get made. Houston Dynamo, they did what they had to do. The Dynamo went out there and they put on a clinic. They made sure that everything was done, finished. No more problems. And currently, first place with 7 points, scoring 8 and allowing 2 with a differential of a +6. And all they have to worry about is Olimpia, who have 2 matches left, one at away at Club Deportivo FAS, and, of course, traveling to BBVA Compass Stadium to take on the Dynamo. So that is going to be interesting. That's going to be fun. I cannot wait. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is the 2012-2013 CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, reviewing week 4 matches. Joining me tonight will be, once again, head coach of the Puerto Rico Islanders, Adrian Whitbread, Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy Insider, Chris Enger of the RSL Show, Dave Clark from Sounder at Heart, and, of course, covering all the teams from Mexico, John Jagu. And, of course, it's probably going to be more of a preview than it is a review for these next couple of weeks. But joining me right now, my good friend from Houston, who's a happy camper. He's very happy doing a bit of a two-step on CD Foss. That's my good friend Warren Jones, who, Warren, you know, we talked about this off the air before you came on is that this was basically a game that the Dynamo had to do and needed to win to get into a better position, and they just manhandled FAS, no questions asked.
Yeah, this was pretty much men among boys from the start. The they ended up winning 4-0, and overall the game really wasn't even that close. I mean, the Dynamo, especially towards the end of the match, had probably two or three other good chances. I mean, this could have, as bad as 4-0 is, it could have been a much more of a blowout than that. But it was a good performance all around, definitely something we needed to advance in the group. One of the things I was concerned about going in is, of course, goal difference, because Olympia has not played FAS yet. So it was a good good performance. I actually would have, right before we started, I was chatting with some of the people sitting near us, saying, I really hope we can get five goals this game. And they almost did it, but they came up a little short. But, hey, I mean, I'll take a 4-0 any day of the week.
Absolutely. And you have to say this, though. I mean, this wasn't just hardworking goals. I mean, some of them are pretty damn sweet. I mean, Cam Weaver in the 49th minute, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, it
yeah,
just that... looked like he knew what he wanted to do, but he kind of screwed it up a little bit, but then he's like, ah, to hell with it. And he just bombs it inside the far post.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a pinball machine for a second there, and then it's almost like Cam just said, enough of this. just rifled it into the upper corner. But all in all, I mean, he ended up with a couple of goals. Giles Barnes had a phenomenal goal to kick everything off. That really set the pace for the rest of the game. It was his first start in a Dynamo uniform, and he definitely impressed. Like I was telling you before, I think he's going to be a sweet addition for not only Champions League, but for the stretch run of MLS. I was really impressed just watching him move and how he moves on the pitch compared to some of our other younger players. I think as an experienced Premier League player with Derby and Fulham, actually I think he's going to bring something to the team that the younger players can look up to, can learn from, can aspire to. But he, I was not expecting to be that impressed, but granted, they were playing against the team that they beat 4-0. So I'm sure when the competition stiffens up a little bit, that may change. But overall, I thought Barnes did a phenomenal job, and they subbed off for him later in the game, and he got a well-deserved round of applause. Just his confidence on the ball, his distribution, something more similar along the lines of Brad Davis that we need. We just need a calmer presence on the ball, I think, in midfield at times, and I think he's going to bring that to the club.
You know, give credit to Dom Kinnear as well, because, you know, he's not taking that game lying down. Yeah, it's 4-0, but he kept on barking orders. He kept on, you know, giving out signals, you know, telling whoever's out there on the field, you know, keep going. You got to keep going. You cannot give a letdown at all.
Right.
Because he knows. He knows. I mean, it's no longer a cakewalk to get out of the group stage. You got to finish first to get into the knockout stage. And he
yep.
knows what's coming up probably around beginning or middle of October when it comes to Olympia at home.
Yeah. And they've set the stage. I mean, they're where they want to be. I think surely they would have preferred to have won on the road against Olympia. They'd have it locked up by now. But, you know, like I said, the performance last night, they looked good. They looked like they'd been playing. A lot of players that don't typically, a lot of the younger players that were starting that don't typically start in league matches got a chance to play, and they looked like, aside with the exception of a few minor possession errors and some bad touches here and there, which is to be expected, you know, they looked like a team that had played before, and I think that's going to serve them well coming down the stretch. But they set themselves up to be right where they need to be. They've got one match left with Olympia at home, assuming Olympia beats FAS at not sure if they're playing in Honduras or Salvador, but assuming they win that match, which they should, it'll be for all the marbles when they come see us in October. And
it will be in El Salvador.
It is, okay.
It'll be in El Salvador,
In that case, you know, slight advantage, home advantage, maybe they'll keep the goal difference down. If they can limit Olympia to one or two goals, that will position us even better. Even three goals. I think if they get three, we may be tied. I don't recall. I'm not sure exactly what the goal difference was. I need to check the standings on that. But
I have it right.
But I know that we're in good shape after last.
At the moment, you are. You've scored eight. You've allowed two. It's a plus six. Olympia currently has scored four, allowed one. It's a plus three. So at the moment, you seem to be in pretty good shape. The point, you know, if it's a draw, though, I think that's a break for Houston.
Oh,
if,
absolutely.
If picks up a draw against on the 27th of September, yeah.
Yeah, the pressure is definitely on Olympia. It's not on us now. They have to go, knowing that they're playing in Salvador, knowing that they have to go on the road and get three just to tie us to come back to play us in our crib to have a chance to advance. I mean, that's there's going to be a lot of pressure on them to perform. It'll be an interesting match to see how they do when they play their next one. But you know, we fielded a largely young side and still looked really good. We started Tyler Derrick in goal instead of gave Tally Hall a rest. I don't know if that we'll see that happen in the next game, but Dom's placed a lot of confidence in Tyler Derrick, who's a terrific second keeper for a young kid. I mean, he's really performed well and did very well last night. Made a couple of nice saves. wasn't really challenged much, but I'll tell you where he did look good is in some of the through balls, some of the 50-50 balls where he needed to come out of goal and challenge someone breaking through, getting behind the defense. He did that last night just masterfully and pretty much swooped up everything that might have got – not much got past Boswell and Hainault, who they were playing at center half last night too. Not much got through them coming through the middle, but when it did, Tyler Derrick was there every time just to sweep it up and clean house. So it was really a pretty dominating performance from one end to the other.
Just out of curiosity, Warren, some of that lingo, I never thought I'd hear you say that. Your crib? You took something from New York City all of a sudden when I saw you? I mean, did you make a left turn somewhere on Broadway or something like that? What happened?
What are you trying to say, Daniel? I'm a hip guy. I know words that you may not have ever heard me say before. I speak jive.
Okay. All right, you know, listen, I never put anything past you before. I might have to ask your wife, but I'll tell you, I never heard that word coming out of your mouth before, but that's okay. I'm just messing with you, but anyway. You're right, though. I mean, I think BBVA Compass Stadium has become a very good home field advantage for the Dynamo. Obviously, teams are trying to find ways to, you know, break that goose egg on you, and it's really tough for anyone to try and get a lead or at least get a goal on the Dynamo over there. That's a great home field advantage right now. And once again, you know, it all depends on what's going to happen, not just with the last game in the group stage with you and Olympia, but what Olympia is going to do against FAS, because you never know.
Right.
You don't even know what referee they're going to get to. So that's the big question right there. You have to say it. I mean, listen, you know, I'm a little tired of saying it, but listen, it's CONCACAF refereeing. You know the drill.
You know it. It's once you seemingly always get outside of U.S. borders, it becomes an officiating crapshoot. And who knows? Now, granted, we don't really have a dog in the fight between Olympia and FAS, other than I'd like to see FAS, you know, at least if not win, hold them to a draw, or at least keep their goal difference down. But yeah, you just never know. I mean, it's it's not out of the realm of possibility for Olympia to go there and win, you know, 8-0, and four of them are on penalty kicks. I mean, you just never know what you're going to get with CONCACAF refs. It's a little dicey at times.
Yeah, it really can be. Let me ask you this question. I know you're only paying attention to the Dynamo games when they're on Fox Soccer, but if I could just ask you this question. What have you seen from this CONCACAF Champions League that's maybe different from the years past? I mean, obviously, outside of going from four groups of four to eight groups of three, from that, what have you seen, basically?
Well, you're right. I haven't seen a lot of the games. I think just that simple format change, though, which I didn't know if I would like at first, but I was discussing it with a guy last night at the game. I said I really like the three team format because it doesn't really allow you to take a game off. It doesn't allow your gaffer to roll out a total reserve side because when you've got a three-team group with home and away ties, you can't take a night off. One night will kill you. And so it puts more pressure on the group stage, puts more pressure on each team to perform in the group stage, whether that's a Mexican team or a Salvadoran team or a MLS team. You have to manage your side very much like they do in Europe. You have to have a roster with depth because you can't do what some coaches do and roll out a reserve side for, you know, U.S. Open Cup and then and not expect a result. I think the CONCACAF Champions League is going to grow in stature a little bit more each year and in popularity. I don't think it's the major excursion that something like UEFA's Champions League. I mean, UEFA's Champions League is, of course, but I think it can get to something like that in a short period of time. Certainly, if they make the group stage and the much more competitive, which I think with the format change they've done that.
Mm, yeah, I'll agree with you on that. I think you can't really take anyone for granted anymore because, like, once you're in a hole, you got to try and get out of it as quickly as possible. And you got to hope that whoever's in your group that might have the lead that you can try and catch up to them, or if they can make a mistake, you can catch up to them and take over that top spot and get to that knockout stage. I also have to say, I think, Warren, that, you know, you, like we said before, Dom Kinnear takes everything seriously and, you know, and when, you know, the whole thing that happened down at Olympia where he got a man sent off for, I guess it was a nothing tackle or maybe it looked like a harsh challenge, but it probably wasn't that harsh. I mean, you know, you got everything gets magnified so much that you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, the one thing I do credit Dom with, and I would not throw him into the a group of coaches that might take other competitions less seriously. Although, you know, if he does take one less seriously, it would be U.S. Open Cup in the past because it just seems like whenever we're playing early stage of U.S. Open Cup, either we've had some injuries or we usually don't field our strongest teams. But that's not because Dominic Kinnear doesn't take it seriously. It's usually because our squad is either thin for whatever reason. Either they've had recent international call-ups, which the Dynamo have had quite a few international players, not just U.S. players, but Canadian players, Jamaican players. So a lot of times it's a real test to see what kind of depth you have in your squad. And I think they've spent, at least in the Dynamo's case, they put a little more energy and money into their youth. And not only have they put their resources into the youth sides, they're letting them play at the higher levels. And I think they're starting to see some dividends from that. And I think last night was a very good example because you had a number of our younger players and first and second year players come together. And this looks, again, the level of competition was not quite MLS, but this looked like a side that had been playing together for a while. And I think with a little bit more experience, we'll be able to field a proper MLS side, a full CONCACAF Champions League side, and be just as competitive in the Open Cup.
Absolutely. Well, Warren, thanks a lot for calling in. I'll talk to you around October for that final group stage game. Good luck with the Dynamo for the rest of the season, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Very good. I'm looking forward to October and looking forward to advancing. I think we'll be in the next round, and we're looking good.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Cheers, Daniel.
Cheers. That's Warren Jones, ladies and gentlemen. Good friend Warren down in Houston as we discuss what's been going on with the CONCACAF Champions League. And, of course, waiting on my next guest, head coach of the Puerto Rico Islanders, Adrian Whitbread. Hopefully we'll be having him on. If not, then we'll just wait for Adam Serrano to come on so we can discuss what's going on with the LA Galaxy side of things. And, of course, let's not forget the, Puerto Rico Islanders, you have to say, probably going through a lot. Caribbean Football Union, of course, Puerto Rico national team playing as well, some of the players. And once again, it looked like against Matapan, it seemed that they had an advantage, and they had a man sent off, and then it just fell apart, and then they traveled to play the Galaxy. And even though it was a strong side, it's just one of those things where you like to think that for the Islanders, who have done a fantastic job in this with the way that they've gone the furthest since Real Salt Lake, of course, and they've had some great matches against some of their opponents, especially against the Galaxy. And it's just one of those things where you have to say that it's just one of those things that for a team like the Islanders that, they pride themselves in becoming that top team and discussing about what goes on with that squad. I mean, I like to think they had themselves a tough tournament this year. Tough to see them actually bowing out. But still, though, I'd like to think that – I really, really would like to think that for the Puerto Rico Islanders, they did a good job and what they had to do. I mean, they qualified for the tournament. I mean, there's nothing more you can ask. You try to perform in it as the best you can. And waiting for Mr. Adrian Whitbread and just hope to see the Puerto Rico Islanders try to improve and try and get better under Adrian Whitbread, who I think has done a fantastic job in NASL play. I think he's done a fantastic job taking over for Colin Clark. I think he's done a great job in getting his team ready to go. And, it's just unfortunate that because they got some solid – well, the LA Galaxy, of course, is none more solid than the Galaxy, of course, but still – you'd like to think with what's been going on with the Islanders that it's going to be a lot better if they qualify for the next tournament through the Caribbean Football Union on the Caribbean zone of CONCACAF. And I really think the Islanders are going to be a force to reckon with, maybe not this tournament, but hopefully for next tournament. I think they're going to do a great job. I really think they're going to do something good here, and I really think it's going to be one of those things that for the Islanders, that they're going to do something special. They're really going to do something special the next time they get into the tournament. And it's just one of those moments that, you know, it's a nil-nil draw. I mean, no bookings. So you have to be pleased about that, that no one got carded, you know, for both sides. But once again, it's just one of those things that, unfortunately, you know, in the tournament like this, with basically no room for error, that the Islanders, unfortunately, fell down. But they'll always get back up. You know, talking with Adrian Whitbread, who is the head coach of the Puerto Rico Islanders, you can tell he puts in a lot of heart into coaching this team, getting them to be a top side in the second division of U.S. soccer in the professional clubs. But, of course, let's not also forget trying to get his side into another possibility of doing well in CONCACAF Champions League. And at the moment, third place in the North American Soccer League. I mean, San Antonio is having a great year in the NESL with 46 points. The Tampa Bay Rowdy is in second. Puerto Rico Islanders in third. And the playoffs have already been set in the NESL as San Antonio and Tampa Bay get the bye as they finish first and second respectively. Puerto Rico in third, Carolina fourth, Fort Lauderdale fifth, and Minnesota sixth. And Puerto Rico and fourth and Minnesota, that's the possible playoff matchup. So, you know, for the Islanders, once again, it's a tough sledding. And, you know, just want to get tough sledding for Puerto Rico, because you know how hard they work and everything like that. I mean, they got some pretty darn good players on this team. Adderley, Edwards, Martinez, Vasquez, Delgado, Nurse, Von Schaak, Foley, Hansen, Ramos, Marrero. I mean, you know, their goalkeeper, Martin. I mean, this is a team that's going to challenge for a spot. And, of course, it's just one of those moments that you like to think for Puerto Rico, that it's going to be one of those moments, and that you just like to think, for Puerto Rico, they're gonna rise again. You know they will, because they're coached so well. We're just waiting on Adrian Whitbread to give us a quick call. Obviously, just talking with Ignacio Rodriguez, head communications officer of the Puerto Rico Islanders, and he's telling me he's going to give us a call like in about 5 minutes or so. So I need 5 minutes with him, and then we'll talk to Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy. Of course, he hosts the LA Galaxy Insider, covers the team. So just a great job by Ignacio helping me out with this. And, he's really a good guy. Ignacio, I've met him since he was in Fort Lauderdale with the Strikers. Of course, before they were known as Miami FC, now back to the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, of course. And it's just one of those moments where you just have to say that it's just a fantastic thing going on, and, you know, you can't really argue with what's going on and how things are being done over there in Puerto Rico, because, as always, Ignacio Rodriguez is on the case, my friends. he's a good man. He works hard. He does everything he can to make sure that that team is running very well. Adrian Whitbread, of course, runs the club when it comes to the players, but to making sure everything goes well smoothly on the field, off the field, Ignacio Rodriguez, he's your man. He really is. He's a good guy, and very glad to have met him, courtesy of Carter Kirshner, of course, head communications officer of North American Soccer League. He's a good guy, and anytime Ignacio needs me to help him out, you know, he always gets it from me too. So it's always a fantastic thing. But once again, Puerto Rico, they did try their best. They tried their best in everything, and you know, I think they'll be back in the tournament. They're always going to be one of the favorites in the Caribbean Football Union qualifying for CONCACAF Champions League. So I don't put anything past Puerto Rico, especially with Mr. Adrian Whitbread running the team. So waiting for Mr. Adrian Whitbread to call in. He'll be calling in very shortly, hopefully. And then we'll just get a couple of words in with him, and then we'll just let him go because, obviously, he probably is thinking pretty hard about what's been going on in this Champions League run for the Puerto Rico Islanders. And it's really tough, obviously, when you lose your first two matches. And then, of course, when you draw, that really signals the end. Obviously, a win would have helped out. Don't know but what the differential would have done. But obvious for the Puerto Rico, and we can take a look at that group that they're in, Group E, of course, the Galaxy, after three games, they're two wins and a draw, undefeated, 7 points with a +7 differential. Puerto Rico, unfortunately, in third, last place in the group with a draw and two losses, allowing 7, scoring 1 for a -6. So that probably would have been tough sledding anyway for them to come back up from, even if they did beat the Galaxy, that probably still would have been tough sledding for them. And once again, they got to host Isidro Metapan in their next group match. Puerto Rico does. And joining us right now, the head coach of the Puerto Rico Islanders, Adrian Whitbread. Coach, thank you for your time. You know, I would like to assume that even though it was a scoreless draw with the Galaxy, Coach, was it much better from your side that they did well against the side that basically hands you a big thrashing at their place?
Yeah, absolutely, Danny. I think we had a lot to turn around and think about after that LA Galaxy game. It hurt deeply, not only the players, the coaching staff, but the supporters and owners as well. And I suppose in a way, a little bit of redemption. You know, they're a very, very good team. And I think on the night we had the better chances. We made their goalkeeper work more than they worked ours. So a creditable 0-0 draw. Of course, we would have loved to have won the game and kept our Champions League hopes alive, but it wasn't to be. But I couldn't have been any prouder of the way that the players performed.
Absolutely. I mean, any team outside of MLS facing a powerhouse like the Galaxy, you know, I give Puerto Rico a lot of credit for this one. You know, tough sledding, of course, through the first two matches, but, you know, you held your heads high, and I'm very happy to see Puerto Rico going out like a proud lion, even though it was 0-0 at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was always going to be very difficult. I think if I look back on the sequence of games, the three games that we've played now, then really the defining moment was really in Metapan, against Metapan when we were 1-0 up, and then, you know, through lack of discipline, we had a player sent off, and you know, we managed to get in at half-time, but, you know, couldn't hold on, you know. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't really understand as well is that I think we, you know, possibly have a tougher schedule than anybody else. And at this present moment in time, up until LA Galaxy, you know, my international players, 10 of them for Puerto Rico, 2 for Guyana, and 2 just recently for the Dominican Republic, have all been away. And that's difficult. You know, you don't get the unity of the team together. Even though, you know, I've got the remainder of the squad left with me, you know, everybody in my squad brings something. And when you lose, you know, between 12 and 14 players, that's difficult. And I understand people turn around and say, well, you know, coach, that's your fault for, you know, employing 14 international players. But, you know, that's the way the football clubs run. You know, we want to turn around and have homegrown talent on the island. But this season it's proven a little bit difficult with CFU not really announcing the group stages of Copa Caribbean until a late stage, so we can never get those dates blacked out on our calendar. And that has enforced big changes throughout the football club.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes, I guess, you know, the term is it's CONCACAF, what are you going to do? As we talk about, you know, for us in the media or the fans, they say it's CONCACAF refereeing whenever these decisions are made on the field. But, I mean, I do feel bad. I mean, obviously, I feel bad for what goes on down there, and hopefully things can be rectified and it gets a little better. But the one thing I've said to the audience is this, is that I do trust in the Puerto Rico Islanders that they'll come back in the next edition of this tournament, because in my mind and in my eyes, I think you're one of the strongest Caribbean club sides right now in the Confederation.
Yeah, you know, that's been proven over the last five seasons, you know, where we've taken this football club to, you know, and I'm sure every coach that comes on your show, especially at this time of the season, you know, getting towards the end of the season, you get into the situation where now you've got to make decisions on players for next year, and you're only as good as your recruitment in the off season. So, you know, that's already taking place. That's the world we work in. And I know that, you know, come next season that we need to improve again. And, you know, that job has started already and is in the process. So, you know, although it's a long off season, you know, next season is already starting already for me in speaking to agents, speaking to clubs, speaking to players that are out of contract at other clubs, and seeing where it takes us, you know. And probably on the back end of last season with where the football club was, you know, with Colin departing, it was a tough time because it was a new era, so to speak, with myself taking charge. I knew the constraints of where the football club was financially, and, you know, I've been very cautious that end, you know, which could be detrimental to myself in being successful. But to this date so far, I think in my first season with where we are, I think we've had a pretty successful season. And, you know, we go into our last CONCACAF game with our heads held high and into our playoffs, you know, looking to turn around and go and win a championship.
Absolutely. And, of course, you make the playoffs in the North American Soccer League. You have your final match at home against the Silverbacks. Obviously, you don't have to worry about playoff, or should I say positioning. You finished third in the table. And the big question is, are you going to face either Minnesota or...
Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
Yeah, Minnesota or Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, I mean, it's another tricky one, Danny, you know, because, you know, that quarterfinal game is a week away. And I'm sure, you know, probably outside of Minnesota and Fort Lauderdale, maybe Carolina, you know, I'm going to make changes. You know, I'm going to rotate the squad because this squad's been stretched over the last 2 or 3 weeks with lots of games, not only for the boys that remain with me, but the players that also went out on international duty, traveling around the country and around the world. And, you know, the one thing you can't go into a quarterfinal game is with key players missing through picking up a silly suspension or an injury. So the balancing act's very fine. I want to win my last two games prior to that quarterfinal. But on the other side of it, I've got to be very, very cautious in making sure that I give this football club the best opportunity to go as far as they can in the playoffs.
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you very much for your time. I know you're very busy with everything that's going on this year, and you got a big playoff matchup to worry about. Thank you for your time. Good luck in your final match in the Champions League, and good luck with the playoffs.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for your time. Pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you as well. That's head coach of the Puerto Rico Islanders, Adrian Whitbread, as the Puerto Rico Islanders, of course, with that draw against the Galaxy, officially eliminates them from going into the knockout stages. And, you know, they got a lot going on for them right now. They got a lot of stuff going on. Going to contact Mr. Adam Serrano now of LA Galaxy Insider. Writes on the Insider on their website. And, of course, Galaxy point of view, if we can get it going here. And let's see if we have him on. Adam, are you there? Oh, it looks like something went wrong on that one. I'm going to try again. see if we can get Adam Serrano back on the air. We want to get the LA Galaxy's end of things here, of course. We want to know about how they felt about with the draw, and, of course, did they go get themselves some good stuff to eat, good stuff to drink. Adam, are you there? Adam Serrano? And again, that does not work for me. So let's try another phone number, if we can, to see if we can get Mr. Serrano on the air here to talk about the Galaxy. And, of course, once again, Landon Donovan finally making an appearance for the Galaxy. As you know, he's been out with that hamstring problem, of course. We don't like to see one of the top players for U.S. soccer not playing, and of course, not being able to play. But hopefully for him, maybe we can get him going. Maybe we have Adam right now. Adam Serrano, are you there?
I am here.
All right, Adam, a big draw for the Galaxy down in Puerto Rico. Even though it was scoreless, I think the Galaxy did their job. I think they made sure they got themselves into the knockout stage, or at least into a better position of it.
Most definitely, Daniel. You know, they brought out the young crew yet again. And it was certainly a satisfying result of sorts for the Galaxy to pick up a draw in a tough place to play. You know, Puerto Rico isn't necessarily considered a tough destination like the Central American countries, but it was a very humid place. The pitch was not ideal. And the Puerto Rico Islanders came out there, and they were a very, very strong side. I was very impressed with the way they responded, and they did very well. So a draw was a pretty fair result for the Galaxy.
Absolutely. But let me also say this. It was really nice to see Landon Donovan. Yeah, he came off the bench, but still, though, I think he did a great job with the amount of minutes he was given by Bruce Arena in that second half. You know, not just for the Galaxy's sake, but, of course, for the U.S. national team when it comes to qualifying, those final two qualifiers in October. Just a fantastic sight to see Landon Donovan back on the field after the hamstring tightened up on him in Mexico.
Yeah, it was great to see him, and I really think he could have gone longer. I really thought that he would get the start, but Bruce Arena had other plans to go with Edson Bell and Jose Villarreal. But he looked like the Landon Donovan that we've come to expect, and he created a few chances. I really think that if he was out there maybe 10 minutes longer, the Galaxy might get that winning goal. But Donovan looks like he's up to full fitness, and he said today that he expects to go maybe the full 90 against Toronto FC this Saturday.
Oh, let's hope so, and let's hope that happens. When you talk about some of these players that the Galaxy have been nurturing, bringing up in their youth academy, how rewarding is it to see these guys step in and actually playing well to replace, you know, one day we all know Beckham's going to retire, the day that Landon Donovan probably might leave Major League Soccer to go play in Europe full time, and even Robbie Keane might not be around, you know, much longer, depending on if he wants to stay in the league, retire, or go back to Europe. But how proud are you to see these young players stepping up and playing big time minutes, not just in the home thrashing against Puerto Rico, but in this road draw as well?
You know, it's a real testament to Bruce Arena. You know, he's picked up some very good young talents in the MLS Super Draft and the Supplemental Draft. He's picked up some young players for the Youth Academy, and they've really done well. This is a very tight-knit group, and while they are a little bit young and they're a little bit inexperienced, this group is a very intelligent group, and I think that's something that will really come in handy for the Galaxy, not only this season, but looking into next season as well. You know, players like Rafael Garcia, Kenny Walker, Brian Gall, Tommy Meyer, the list goes on and on. These guys are not your typical rookies. You know, they're very smart, they're very wise, and I've been very impressed just in my daily dealings with them about their maturity that they show both on the field and off of it. You know, they're very talented young players, and I think that if the Galaxy can keep this group together, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did well. But if they can't, you know, these guys are players who I honestly believe, and I know a lot of other people that I know around the league believe this as well, these guys can be starting for teams they can be starting for their MLS teams, but they're with the Galaxy, and we'll see how it goes with them.
Absolutely. Now I have to ask you this. I'm assuming that's not the first time you've been to Puerto Rico. What did you drink?
It was the first time I had been to Puerto Rico, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
As a West Coast boy, I don't get out to the Caribbean as much as I should. But it was a great trip, you know. The people of Puerto Rico are fantastic. Great interactions. I spent some time touring the city. Got to take a little dip in the Atlantic Ocean. Not
there
my
you.
Cup of tea, actually. But it was great. It was a great trip. It was a great trip. You know, I had more than a few drinks myself. You know, got a little of that Puerto Rican rum and the pina coladas. It was fantastic, fantastic. We actually, me and a few other writers, actually went to the place, the birthplace, so to speak, of the pina colada. It was great. Fantastic.
That's great to hear. I only hope that the bartender didn't have a cheat sheet.
Yeah. Here's hoping. I hope El Salvador can be anything. Can be half as nice as Puerto Rico. I'm not holding my breath, though.
Okay, fine. So what's the difference between the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean? There's no difference at all.
You know, the Atlantic Ocean is a lot warmer, and it seems to be a lot saltier than, I think that has to do with it being warmer than the Pacific Ocean. You know, in the Pacific Ocean, you kind of have the Arctic currents that roll through it, so it's a lot colder. And I think I actually prefer the cold to the heat. It was a little hard to swim in, but it was fun.
That's cool. That's pretty good. So now, of course, with the LA Galaxy looking to be in good position, top of the Group E table, the Galaxy still has that road game against Isidro Metapan. Depending on what the Puerto Rico Islanders do to Metapan, I mean, obviously, a loss by Metapan against Puerto Rico, and obviously that eliminates them. But a draw could, or a win could, basically keep them alive, depending on what goes on that game. What is the Galaxy's mindset right now? Obviously, they are looking to keep that top spot to get into the knockout stage. What do you see happening?
You know, the Galaxy are kind of in a holding pattern right now. They're scoreboard watching. They know that they're the biggest fans of the Puerto Rico Islanders right now, because if Puerto Rico knocks out Metapan next week, then the Galaxy are through. You know, that game against Metapan and El Salvador will take on a different significance. And that's really what the Galaxy are hoping for, because if you look at the schedule, that game against Metapan is sandwiched in between games against San Jose and Seattle. So that's going to be a really, really tough stretch for the Galaxy, and games that they're going to need to win if they want to finish in the top three in the Western Conference. So it's going to be a little bit of a battle, and the Galaxy right now are hoping that Puerto Rico can get the job done. And if Puerto Rico are as good as they looked on Wednesday, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see them knock off Metapan. But if they can't, you know, it all lies on that match on October 25th in Metapan, and we'll see how the Galaxy can do. They have had experience with that sort of match in the past. They went to Honduras last year needing a win, and they beat Motagua to finish top of their group. So we'll see how it goes. And it all lies on Puerto Rico right now to see how the Galaxy do, and we'll have to see what happens.
Absolutely. Adam, thank you for the time. Thanks for joining me. Good luck the rest of the way, and we'll see what happens next week if Puerto Rico does the Galaxy a favor.
I will see. We'll see. Thank you again for having me on, Daniel.
Not a problem at all. Take care. It's Adam Serrano from the LA Galaxy Insider. Of course, writes on their website for the Los Angeles Galaxy in MLS. Good man. Comes on the show a lot of times. Very happy to have him on. And just feel really good talking with them and just hanging out. Haven't met him yet. Wanted to when LA was supposed to come over, and he was supposed to come over last year in the playoffs when the Galaxy played the Red Bulls. But too bad I couldn't see him. But that's okay. Adam Serrano, good guy all around. Very happy to have him being on the show and talking about the Galaxy and what's going on. Once again, this is the Special 40 Scenes Fire Internet Soccer Show, CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, week four, round four, CONCACAF Champions League, as we go through MLS and, of course, with some of the teams from Mexico as well, and Joining us very soon will be Dave Clark, Sounder at Heart. Of course, John Jagu, who covers the Mexican Primera Division and the national team on Big Soccer. And joining us very soon will be Mr. Chris Enger of the RSL Show, as it's going to be very interesting to hear what he has to say after that performance by Salt Lake down in Panama against Herediano. And, you don't want to really harp too much about that. I mean, they got the result that they needed. They were able to come and get what had to happen. They got their goal. They went home happy. But was it a performance from a Salt Lake perspective, a supporter perspective? Did they do enough? Because if I was a Salt Lake supporter, I mean, you're basically wiping off the sweat from your brow. But was that a performance to write home about? That's the number one question that we have here. And to my opinion, I mean, listen, I'm looking at this from the outside. Did they put on a good performance, and was it good enough for them to get through? And you're hoping to get it from someone that watched that match, like my good friend Christopher Enger from the RSL Show, and hopefully it's going to be, we'll get the true inside information and we'll find out how he feels. Because obviously, in my opinion, and this is only my opinion, the job got done, but was it good enough that you feel comfortable?
Leave me a message.
Unfortunately, we got an answering machine. We're going to try and give him another buzz through the wonderful, magical world of Twitter. Maybe, just maybe, because he did ask me about the number, and I want to get some inside information, because we need to know, what does the Salt Lake supporter think right now? What is going in the minds of a Salt Lake supporter of a team that is normally a strong-willed side that does well in the league and does well in the at times has done well at the Open Cup, but of course had that big run in the CONCACAF Champions League. And hopefully, we will have Christopher Enger on to give us his opinion about what happened. What happened on that fateful night, Tuesday, September the 18th? Because, inquiring minds want to know, was that a good performance from Salt Lake? You'd like to think so. You'd like to hope so. But we're going to find out when Mr. Enger contacts us, or if we can get him on the air here, hopefully, because, this is important stuff here, ladies and gentlemen.
Phone right now, so please leave me a message.
Getting more answering machine as it all happens. As it's coming down to the wire here. And, of course, for Salt Lake, if you want to take a look at Salt Lake in the standings, Herediano has not played their third game yet. They will be home against Taro FC. And at the moment, Herediano from Costa Rica has the advantage, because they haven't played their third game yet. And that's the thing you have to worry about. What's going to happen when Herediano is, you know, what are they going to do if they do win their third game? Because then now you're talking about goal differential. Salt Lake can win the game as much as they want, but at the moment, the differential is at a +2 for both Salt Lake and Herediano, depending on what the result is against Taro. And if Taro does nick a goal, you know, that's in favor of Salt Lake, no matter what they do, Herediano. But, you know, Salt Lake can win, but it depends on how many goals they're going to score.
With your phone number, and I'll call you.
And once again, Mr. Anger having a little difficulty picking up his phone or turning it on his phone. But we're going to have to wait and see. What's going to happen, and we're just going to have to wait and see what Mr. Enger is going to say, and hopefully he gets to the phone real quick because he asked me about, you know, what time to come on, unless his clock broke. But we'll have to wait and see. But once again, Salt Lake, it was a goal, a much-needed goal from RSL. As the, you know, Salt Lake needed to go in. Alvaro Saborío, penalty. A penalty kick. Because the keeper, Villarreal, did the stupid thing by taking down a player. And hopefully, and once again, you know, we'll see what happens, because once again, it's just one of those things where you don't know. It's just one of those things where you're just not sure about what Salt Lake is going to do now. Because I know it's a tough run MLS season, I understand. But still, I mean, this is an important game as well. I mean, you, if you're a Salt Lake fan, you want to see them go back to the final. Because that loss at home, picking up that goal, Monterrey, in first half stoppage time, and have the advantage on the differential, or shall I say on the goal aggregate, and you had to pull one back to at least win the title on the goal differential. And it's just one of those things where you don't know what's going on, you don't know how it's going to work out, and that's one of the things that, in my mind, Salt Lake needs to do to get into a better position to get into the knockout stage. Because Salt Lake needs more than just 3 points now. Now it depends on what Herediano does.
My phone right now said, please leave me a message.
Well, it looks like Mr. Anger is not going to be available to come on the show. It looks like he will not be available to come on. Trying to get someone else real quick if we can talk anything Salt Lake. But once again, for Real Salt Lake, it's just one of those things where it's just where did you feel comfortable enough as a Salt Lake supporter with that performance? What's going to happen with that type of performance if it's just, you know, you just never question anything that goes on with Jason Kreis, and I don't want to have to start questioning him now. I really don't. Because I do believe that Jason Kreis has what it takes. I shouldn't really say he has what it takes, but he has the players to go out there and to go forward and to try and get whatever they can to go through. Because, once again, it's just one of those moments where, you know, you want to, you know, trust the guy. And you do trust him. But it's the players. How did they perform mentally? Not saying they'll never perform great. Not saying they took it.
Martha, please leave me a message.
That's okay. So, once again, Chris Franger not available to come on the show. Apparently, something has come up. Hopefully, everything's okay with Chris. And, you know, just keep on moving over. It's just one of those moments that this happens sometimes, you know. I'm not worried about it. Chris will come back on another time. He owes me now. Anger owes me. That's the truth. But anyway, as we move on here, Voice Inspire Net Soccer Show, the CONCACAF Champions League group stage review of round four, as we keep going here, all I can say is that for Salt Lake, I would be worried a little bit. Not so much in league play, but I'd be a little worried with, you know, how Salt Lake is going to handle maybe a bit of a backlash on the way that they played. And I really mean it. It's a little because, you know, they could have been eliminated that night. I mean, the draw was never going to help them. The draw could have hurt them, and they had to basically pray to see what, you know, what might have happened if, you know, the next match in the group, you never know. Because Taro, well, let's just say this. Let's just say that it was a draw. It'd be Herediano with 6 points, Salt Lake with 4 points. And just for the heck of it, let's just say Herediano drew with Taro. That's a win for Salt Lake for the final group stage match. Let's just say as well, maybe it was a Taro win. That's a lot better for Salt Lake in the last match in October against Herediano. So either way, it could have been a victory for either side. You never know. These things happen. It's just one of those things where you just don't know what's going on. And it's always a guessing game when it's something like this. But once again, the situation, it called for itself to basically penalty kick goal. That's all Salt Lake really needed to go ahead. They got the big 3 points that they had to get. Not a convincing performance from Salt Lake, but just enough to get the necessary points, the full 3 points. And now we have to wait and see what's going to happen in the fifth week in CONCACAF for the group stage, as we're going to move on here. And unfortunately, Mr. Christopher Anger is not available to come on. And once again, you know, probably something has happened, and we don't know. Maybe it's a family thing going on with Christopher, but that's okay. But obviously, though, we're talking about next the team, the first team in this CONCACAF Champions League group stage that has advanced into the knockout stage, and that's the Seattle Sounders. Dave Clark of Sounder at Heart, congratulations to the Sounders. 3 straight wins, 9 points. Fantastic job.
Yeah, it's really good to get that out of the way. It lets Seattle focus on some other things within the league and really just jockey for knockout round positioning.
absolutely. My question to you is this. Seattle plays well defensively. They attack well offensively. The Gersperning played very well in goal. How is it that the Sounders are giving up penalties, and that's the only way their opponents can score on them?
CONCACAF? I mean, Stevie Smith said to us a couple of weeks ago that the referees in CONCACAF will call it a little bit tighter because it helps their overall ratings when they get evaluated for the national team competition. So these refs that are reffing the Champions League games are on the short list to ref, like, the Gold Cup and the World Cup qualifiers. So they call a slightly stricter game because of that, and there's a little bit of regional pride. Now, you're not going to get a Mexican or a Canadian ref calling a game involving an MLS team, but what you are going to get is, if it's in Central America, you're going to get a Central American ref, and there's a little bit, I don't want to call it bias, but there's a little bit of bias in their favor. So, you know, in this last game, Michael Gersperning clearly earned that penalty. Patrick Ioane, though, I don't know how you get a penalty for running away from a guy who trips on you.
Exactly. So. That's what I said in my opening monologue. Gersperning, yes, the right leg was out too long. He did take down the attacker. But that second one, I don't think he even got Ioane, or Ioane got him. I think he just turned around and he just fell down.
But there's a little clip of the heel, but you can't call an unintentional clip of the heel while running away from the player a penalty. That's just not the way the rules are meant to be. Gersperning today in practice had said to the gathered media, he's like, you know what? That's too many in three games. We're not a physical and violent bad team like that. There's something going on. But you know what's funny is Seattle, in all of their Champions League games this year, they've played five of them so far. Sure, they've given up seven goals in the run of play in those five. But
yep,
all seven of those were against Santos Laguna. Then that's a pretty good team. So in these five games, even then, they've given up 11 goals. Four of them were on penalties. The rest were to Santos Laguna. You know, things are looking pretty good for the Sounders in this whole Champions League thing. They've got a favorable seeding now. It's likely they will miss a Mexican team in the knockout rounds. And Real Salt Lake can tell you how important that is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was just saying about Salt Lake how, you know, I don't know if they knew that this was an important game for them towards the end of the second half, because it looked like, you know, they didn't want to – there was, like, no pedal to the metal. And the penalty that they got, it was like, you know, brain fart by the keeper, because he forgot that it was scoreless and they had an advantage.
The CONCACAF Champions League is clearly a growing league. It's not mature for the players. It's not mature for the fans. There are struggles that we deal with, and it goes for the referees as well. You know, there's a lot of advancement that needs to happen. But once it gets down to those knockout rounds, you're going to see quality play. The two-leg format definitely lends itself well to quality play. The teams that are left are all capable of winning it, even if it's an MLS team that's never won it. You know, if RSL had, you know, if one or two moments had gone their way, what was that, a year and a half ago, they could have won the Champions League. You know, Toronto and Seattle both got crushed by Santos Laguna. But at the same point, you know, the idea that Santos Laguna can put up four goals in the second half of every game against an MLS team, I don't think that's true anymore. Seattle knows what they're getting into. For me, you look at the 2010 cycle for the Champions League compared to the 2011 cycle for the Champions League with Seattle. In 2010, Seattle had my record's going to be either 1-4-1 or 1-5-0. And then the next year, they qualified for the knockout rounds, including a win in Monterrey on Mexican soil. So
right,
Seattle will mature and advance and not necessarily advanced, but they're going to perform at a rate that it isn't embarrassing.
I just think that Siggy Schmidt has done a fantastic job managing the Sounders in the CONCACAF Champions League. Like you just gave us the numbers right there. He's progressed well. He knows who to plug into the starting 11, who to come off the bench, and how to get the goals and how to perform. Siggy Schmidt is once again, he's done a fantastic job. It doesn't matter if it's in the Open Cup, but now it's in the CONCACAF Champions League. The Sounders are looking like a team that's, I mean, I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse here, Dave, but to me it looks like that the Sounders could have a better go at it in the knockout stages.
I'm fairly certain of that, just because the fact of the matter is this Marathon of Honduras is going to be eliminated by the time they come up to CenturyLink Field. And if you're a bad Honduran team, what kind of squad are you going to bring up to Seattle to try and get a result in the game that doesn't matter? Going to be a mix of their youth team and reserves. They're going to go up against a squad probably with Marcus Hahnemann in it, who understands CONCACAF in ways that even Michael Spurney doesn't. And, you know, Seattle's probably going to win that. And if they do that, they're going to finish in the top three in seeding in the Champions League. And, you know, it's just another example. You said that Siggy Schmidt has been great at figuring out these lineups. If you look at the past 3 years of MLS players' performances in non-league play, you have Sammy Ochoa, who now has 6 goals in non-league play. Last year, you had Mike Basito, who had 7 goals in non-league play. The year before that, you had Nate Jaquia, who succeeded in non-league play while he was the Open Cup player of the tournament. Siggy has managed to figure out ways to get these players who are, at the time, borderline MLS talents to just exhibit their skills in the Champions League and the Open Cup in ways that they look like they could be potential MLS stars.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to say Eddie Johnson was a great pickup as well. Look at the goal he scored to make it 2-1 in the second half. I mean, that's just an incredible side footer for, you know, with a defender on his back, and he finds a way to power it in past the keeper. I mean, that's just a fantastic goal to make it 2-1.
Yeah, for me, it was Eddie Johnson channeling Freddie Montero. That was Freddie Montero's goal against Portland. If you look, Freddie kind of received almost the exact same kind of pass where it was up high, not necessarily at his feet, kind of bouncing there. Eddie and Freddie both turned on it, didn't have any idea where the keeper was, and just slammed it towards a bad keeper. And what did they do? They both scored. That's kind of what this competition here is between Freddie Montero and Eddie Johnson. It's not that they're competing with each other in ways that harm each other. They're competing with each other in a manner that compels them both to perform at their absolute best. And what we saw was Eddie Johnson at his best. He wasn't doing the header thing that he does in league play. He was doing footwork. He was doing, you know, quick shots. You saw Eddie Johnson as the old Eddie Johnson, where he drifted out wide and was able to, you know, display his foot skills, and he had the opportunity in Champions League to do that. And I think you'll see, you know, Freddie Montero this weekend in league play will channel a little bit of what Eddie Johnson's done in league play. You're going to see Freddie, you know, has that opening to say, you know what, I'm just as good as he is. To me, it's a healthy competition here between those two forwards, and while neither of them is Chris Wondolowski, both of them are amongst the best goal scorers in the league right now.
I think you could also say that the Sounders have a good amount of depth on the roster that you can interchange some of these players from league play to Open Cup to Champions League.
Yeah, Seattle has definitely leaned on their depth for a long time. Where other teams are limited into just using the reserve league in order to get playing time, the Sounders have gone deep enough in the Open Cup and have used the Champions League to kind of, you know, I don't like war metaphors, but they've battle-tested several players. They've blooded several of their players. They've gotten them time, and they've gotten them those experiences in competitive matches that matter. You saw it with Zach Scott, who has developed and grown, and now he's a regular in league. Servando Carrasco, Andy Rose, Alex Caskey, Sammy Ochoa this year. Cordell Cato has been great in very limited MLS usage, but if you look at, I think he's got something like 450 minutes in non-league competitions. If you look at what Seattle and how Seattle has used their roster, the number of players that have appeared in a third of the games or more is quite deep. And the fact of the matter is they're one of the best teams in the league. They're one of the best teams out of the league. And that's a rare thing to see in this salary cap situation we deal with.
Absolutely, as well as other quirky rules that MLS likes to throw out at us and stuff like that. Let me ask you a question here. Caledonia and Marathon, is there a similarity with how they played against Seattle? Was there a difference of some sort? Because to me it looked like Marathon maybe was a little bit more hungrier than Caledonia was.
I think that just had to do with the circumstances. Marathon was a better wing play team, in my opinion, than Caledonia. I thought Caledonia did a great job. They've got some defenders that I'd actually like to see in MLS. Both of their starting center backs in the two games that I saw, I thought were capable of being a third center back in MLS, maybe a second center back. I particularly like Radafa Abubakar for Caledonia. He's got great size. He's a good passer. I'm not going to say he's Jeff Cameron, but he's that style when Jeff Cameron played center back where he's able to play with the ball at his feet, able to get up and defend huge, and he's a good player on set plays. Caledonia, oddly, you don't normally see it in the Caribbean, but Caledonia was a very large team. They played with, you know, they played that kind of set play team that you see, you know, the John Spencer Portland Timbers or the Houston Dynamo before they switched to their variation of the 4-3-3. Caledonia is a pretty good set play team. I'd like to see some of their players brought up because I think they have the physical nature that could succeed. Whereas with Marathon, their players that would be good are their outside mids, Barrios. I kind of liked what he did with his speed and his ability on the dribble. But at the same point, they were hungrier. They had the opportunity to make the final. Caledonia clearly couldn't make the knockout rounds.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with you over there. Well, like I've said before, the Sounders are the first team to qualify for the knockout stages. Marathon comes to CenturyLink Field on October 24th. Does Ziggy Schmid go for the full sweep, or does he decide to let some reserve side or maybe a youth academy players get a chance at some real minutes?
I don't think you'll see the youth academy players, but it's going to be a heavy reserve side. I predict that you'll see Marcus Hahnemann as a Seattle Sounders starting player for the first time in that game. I would expect that you see Serbano Carrasco back. The defensive line will look very similar to a league game, but the offense, you're going to see Sammy Ochoa, David Estrada. You know, that's Estrada has 6 goals, Sammy Ochoa has 7. So, you know, the forward pairing, which is the third and fourth best forward on this team, will have 13 goals in all competitions this year. You'll see Cordell Cato probably and Mario Martinez, probably Andy Rose. You know, at that point, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily a great team. It's a reserve-laden team, but you're also talking about players that, you know, Andy Rose, David Estrada, Sammy Ochoa have plenty of experience in MLS so far in the past year and a half. And, you know, at keeper, you're going to have Marcus Hahnemann, who, if he's back, he's probably the best reserve keeper in MLS.
Wow. Awesome. I mean, Seattle, to me, you know, you just have to ride the horse over and over and over again until you get things right. And I'll definitely agree with you, Dave, as well as Jeremiah. Ziggy got everything correct. And now all you got to do is sit back, relax, enjoy this just enjoy everything.
Yeah, and again, that last game is really going to be about for Seattle, it's going to be about the knockout round positioning, which is important. You have to avoid that Mexican side in the first round of the knockout play. And the other thing it's going to be about is resting Seattle's players coming into the MLS playoffs because they'll have one more MLS regular season game and then the playoffs after that. And Seattle's number one goal this year is MLS Cup. Nothing means more than that.
Absolutely. Have a good night, Dave. Congrats, and I'll talk to you in October.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dave Clark of Sound Art Heart. Joining me now, of course, John Jagu, talking about some of the games from the Mexican side of perspective. And I believe there was only one game. There were two games with Mexican clubs. Tigres with a 1-1 draw against Real Esteli. Let's go to that one first, John. What did you make of this match? Because I would like to think that Tigres, they saved their own skin again, and they forced a draw.
Good evening, Daniel from New Orleans. Pretty
easy on the Creole,
here, but,
please.
Yes, well, I've already stopped the demand to have the natives, but they send, especially on the away team, they'll send an alternate team, and as you said, their skin was saved by one of the young kids. In fact, it was a kid by the name of Giovanni Spericueta, who got the equalizer late after coming on. Like, had only been on the field for like 5 or 10 minutes. And he was one of the U-17 heroes a couple summers ago for Mexico. And, Tigres, despite, Tuca Ferretti's attitudes of not really taking this tournament seriously, I mean, they're waltzing right through, and they're gonna qualify for the knockouts, and it'll be interesting to see if he actually decides, and honestly believe that I think they will decide to start using some of the stronger lineups because of what their crosstown rivals have been able to do over the past couple of years. In Monterrey, what the other guy's done is almost or more important than what your team has done. So I think because of that, we're going to see Tigres, once they're through, they'll probably start fielding very strong lineups. In fact, I want to say even Jonathan Bornstein got some action in this game. He started, played most of the game. He wasn't up that late. But, Tigres, they get the draw. I mean, we talk a lot of all the time how hard it is to go down to Central America and get results. They were just about to have a shocker, but Espericueta came in and got the late equalizer. Tigres escapes with their 1 point, and they should be able to lock up the qualifications for the next round with the home game.
Yeah, definitely. And you just got to say that with Tigres, I mean, once again, it's a late goal. I mean, everyone probably supporting Tigres is thinking, oh, this is it, it's over. And you're probably, the group is already a mess as it is. But with that late goal, it just saves their skins. And it looks like it's going to be one of those battles for that final game. Now, Alajuelense still has to play at home against Esteli. But, this is going to be one of those down to the wires. I mean, forget even, the differential, because so many times people keep saying, or you keep hearing, it's the differential that's going to be the most important stat in this new version of the Champions League. Not in this group, in Group F. It's going to be a win. Someone's going to have to win this group outright.
Yeah, I think so. And I think head-to-head is the first tiebreaker in CONCACAF anyway. So the differential is a little further down the list, and I mean, I know that Alajuelense is there a solid club team from Costa Rica, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the end. Will this finally be the team out of Mexico that doesn't make it into the next round? I don't think it's going to be the case. I think they're going to somehow manage to get the results they need to go through. But strange things have happened. I mean, they still have to play the game, so it wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I'm sure that the coach, we will definitely not say publicly, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of, there'll be a lot of egg on their face. I'm sure probably they'll thank God I don't have to deal with this tournament anymore, but which is a shame because I think it's a great tournament. I think that it's made the region grow more than the people are realizing. I think we're going to see a lot of that in the upcoming Hex with some of the Central American teams that are going to be a lot tougher at home. Coming up because of the fact that their players have a lot more international experience than they had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I've told you many times, I'm a huge proponent of the tournament. I think anything to make our region stronger is great. And
So,
you know, on the other hand, you know, we have the other game where Santos went in with a, again with an alternate team and just crushed Aguilar. I mean, it wasn't even close. And, you know, their goal scorer, the kid that got the double, had just gotten back from China with the U-20 national team and, you know, goes out and gets and gets a double for Santos in their 4-0 win. It's just I'm pretty amazed over the past 3 or 4 years just how well and how much, how many good players, good young players are starting to finally channel through the ranks of the Mexican teams because of the fact that the FMS has pretty much forced their hand, although and telling them, you know, once you join the top flight, you're going to have a U15 team, you're going to have a U17 team, and a U20 team, and also and all three of them are going to have a tournament that coincides with the with the senior team tournaments as well. So I think that because of that, and because they're forcing these guys to, you know, go out and find these players, that we're starting to see the fruit of that. In fact, with Escobar also getting the double, and Espericueta finally making his debut for Tigres on the senior side and getting that goal down in Central America. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It's definitely exciting for a fan of Mexico to see these young kids come in and play and play well and get very decent results.
Now, let me ask you this, because I'm assuming Santos Laguna has already been given the top spot from A, even though Toronto still has to play Aguila on the 25th of September, and then Toronto's got to go down to Santos anyway. So mathematically, I think Toronto is still alive, but when you see the differential, depending on how many goals they're going to score against Aguila, well, I guess we're going to have to wait and see until you give it to Laguna officially. But I'd like to think Laguna's got the top spot in Group A.
Yeah, I think so. And I think not only do they have the top spot, I mean, I think that, and we've talked about this in the past, I think that they're probably going to be the prohibitive favorites. They're going to be a really tough team to beat, whether it's a Mexican side or whether it's a American side or a Salvadorian side, you know, whoever it is that ends up playing in the upcoming rounds, they're going to be an extremely difficult team. I mean, they're getting all these results, and one of their best players, Olivia Peralta, really hasn't really gotten on track yet since he got back from the Olympics. So they're only going to get better. So it's definitely something for folks to, maybe open their eyes and see. You know, they're playing some really good soccer in the north of Mexico, in Monterrey. Both teams, and in Santos, of course, Tijuana right now, which is in the CONCACAF, but they're right now they're leading the Liga MX, so but the power has certainly shifted to the north.
Well, let's preview quickly about these next two games, these next 2 weeks, obviously for Monterrey and Chivas Guadalajara. Let's go to Monterrey first, because right now Monterrey Municipal, they're tied on points, but the differential is a +5 difference, and Monterrey leads Group G, and Monterrey and Municipal will be on the 25th, which will be on a Tuesday, and it will be in Monterrey. How confident are you that Vucetich is going to have his side ready to go to face Municipal from Guatemala? Because I just have this feeling that Monterrey is going to win it.
Yeah, I don't think that, I'm pretty sure that they're gonna. He'll have his team ready to play. The crowd, you know, that's the great thing about playing these CONCACAF Champions games up in Monterrey. It's the crowd. I mean, the crowd shows up, and they have just a great atmosphere. Monterrey is a great place to watch. It's a great place to watch soccer, whether it's in Monterrey or with Tigres. The atmosphere is terrific. Vucetich is gonna have to juggle his lineup a little bit. I don't know how many. Reserves he's going to use. He's going to have to use more than I'm sure he wanted to, because they've lost Jesus Zavala, who has he sprained his MCL in one of his knees, and he's out for 3 months. And he was also on the national team starter. So there's a pretty good chance that he may not even make it to the Club World Cup in December. So I'll keep an eye on that. And then they also lost Aldo Benigris, who again another national team player to injury. I'm not sure exactly what his injury was, but I know that he's not playing this weekend for sure in the local. So, Vucetich isn't as deep as he used to be. They had their last draft, I guess you want to call it that. Some teams got too many good players, so they started pecking away at him. So, but again, you know, it's another team that, is going to rely on their youth. They have a couple of players that have come in this season that have done well. They have a guy that I really like in Abraham Pirinha, who I think is going to be a terrific striker. I think he can come in and play for the Negers. And of course, they have Chupete, who for the past 4 or 5 years has been the best player in Mexico for an order basket. He's just been a terrific, terrific addition to Monterrey, and has put them in the positions of success almost single-handedly. He's just been a terrific addition for them, and I think that the fact that if he is on the field, whether he starts or comes in as a sub, I think that that will certainly tilt the field in Monterrey's favor.
Absolutely, and of course Chivas of Guadalajara, they're on the road in the Caribbean in Trinidad against W Connection on September 26th. And then they're hosting Jilau on October 25th at the Volcano.
Yeah, they're going to have to win both of those, I think.
Yeah,
because Jilau is in good, they're in good position to take the group. So if Chivas comes back to Trinidad with anything less than 3 points, that's really going to put the that's going to make it very, very difficult for them to advance past Jilau. And they did again. Chivas, we talk about injuries. They might as well be sponsored by a hospital because they have just been absolutely decimated by injuries this season. They lost Marco Fabian last week to he had a really nasty fall and had separated his shoulder, so he's out for a few weeks. And of course, he hadn't really gotten back into things. They just one player. It's just one big event. It's been awful. It's been gruesome, nasty. They do that super slow-mo, and you see these, parts of your body that move in the way that they're just not supposed to move. It's elbows, knees, it's just gruesome. And John Van Skip is, if he can get any kind of result and get them to qualify into the knockouts, would be a huge accomplishment because he really has been up against the wall, not just in this tournament, but also with a tournament locally. They just won their first match in the local league, and who knows how long, just last week with a last goal by Marquez Lugo. So Chivas is, definitely have their backs up against the wall, but usually, we certainly see team characters revealed in situations like this. Chivas has a golden opportunity to, I always see situations like this to see teams and see what they're really made of, see if they can really come out of this. And the Chivas has one of those opportunities. We're going to see what they're made of. If they can come out and get the W down in against the W Connection, and then play for all the marbles against Xelajú, then we'll definitely see what they're made of. And hopefully they'll be able to do it, because I think that no team wants to be the first Mexican team not to make it past the knockouts.
Oh, definitely. I would not put it past. Yeah. No, absolutely.
They're in position for sure.
No, absolutely there, John, because, that would be, especially against one of the top teams in all of Mexico, with Cruz Azul and Club America, even with, Monterrey and how they're playing.
Chivas is they're the standard bearer. They're the historic team. They're the most popular team. They are I wouldn't call them the Yankees of Mexican soccer just because they haven't really, they've won a lot, but they haven't won anything in a long time. So, if there's any team that won a bunch of World Series in the 30s and 40s but hasn't done anything since, that's what you have. But again, they're incredibly popular, and they're, they're certainly, one of the flagships of the league. So it would be, it would be more than humiliating for them if it turns out that they didn't make it past the group stage in this, especially considering who they were playing.
Absolutely.
But hats off to Xelajú. I think Xelajú has been, they've taken their chances, and they've done a great job. And again, it goes back to what we talked about before. It's because of tournaments like this that we see the growth in areas where we otherwise may not have seen it. And I think that ultimately, in the long run, it's going to make the region better. And anything that makes the region better, again, I'm all for it. If it means teams have to lose, I'm totally perfectly fine with that. As long as we get more competitive within the region, because it's not fun watching games where it's 8-9. Who wants? It's just not. It's not fun for anybody. Except for
no, it's
guys
not. Absolutely. Well, John, enjoy your time in New Orleans. Thanks again. I'll have you on next week, and let's see what happens. No problem at all. We'll see what happens.
I'll be in Orlando next week, so remember that I'm going to be in your time zone.
See, that's a rarity for me and you.
Absolutely. Well, you have a great weekend, Daniel, and
thanks.
Have a very safe and somber week next week.
I will. Thank you very much. That's John Jagu, ladies and gentlemen. He covers the Mexican national team and the clubs in Mexico for Big Soccer. And let me tell you, you know, he does a great job writing those articles, and he does a great job. And, you know, I'm glad I have him on here because he knows what's going on down in Mexico. Finally joining us. And, yes, Chris, I forgive you because the wife needed you, and I understand.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. That's why it's a two-hour show. I have an extra 15 just to have you on. But but honestly, you know, I said this before. Woo! You leave Panama with a 1-0 victory in second-half stoppage time, a penalty called against Taro. Villarreal made a stupid thing by taking out one of the RSL forwards. Saborío converts the penalty, makes it 1-0. Did you feel confident in that performance? I know, look, you'll take the result, and I understand that. I would too. But did that performance give you any confidence about the final game in that group?
Well, it's hard to say because the conditions down there are so hard to play in. You know, we're not used to playing in so much humidity. Beckerman wasn't playing. What I will say this is this, though, so I will take our home field advantage. Number one, we'll pack the stadium. And number two, altitude in a cold environment, I feel confident with that next game. I'm glad everything's played out so that all we have to do is win by more than one, and we're good. That's all we have to do.
Awesome. Well, let me just tell you. I mean, look, in my opinion, look, no offense to Jason Christ at all. No offense to Christ. I know he's a great coach right now. He's led RSL to a championship. He got RSL into the final of the CONCACAF Champions League, even though you lost the home leg in the final. But my question to you is this. You know, do you think maybe some of the players are starting to I mean, I don't want to say they're revolting or anything like that, but do you think maybe the way that Taro kind of, well, let's put it this way, you know, were you expecting the flopping like the last time?
Oh, of course. I mean, anytime you play one of these countries that are in one of the different leagues, I'm expecting them to flail around, stall, waste time, and it's happened every time we play one of these clubs. The teams that don't do this are the Canadian teams, American teams, and Mexican teams, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, every game, every time we play a Costa Rican team, anytime we play a Panamanian team, I'm expecting that to be just a real frustrating game to watch as they flail around and try and draw cards, fouls, penalties. So it's something I expect. Now, one thing I want to note about the game, Daniel, is even though we look sluggish, we still pressed for that win enough so that we gave up several key counters. I mean, there are a couple times when Taro had a 5-on-2 or a 4-on-2 breakaway, and credit to the two guys playing defense at the time. They made the stop when the stop was needed, and then we got that penalty call late in the game. So, I mean, it's not like Jason's not trying to play for wins. I credit to him for going all out there at the end. It was just that was a scary game. That game was so scary. I'm so glad
I know, because I'm telling you right now, I mean, you got to face Herediano in your final group stage game, because right now, I mean, you're tied on points, and the differential is even on two, but now you got to hope that for Taro, they're going to do you guys a favor now, because Herediano, not so much it's the points, but it's also the differential. I mean, the differential right now could change at the end of next week?
Well, lucky for us, the first tiebreaker is the goal differential between the two games that we play each other. Herediano. So if we beat Herediano by more than one, because we scored more goals than they scored against us, we move on.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I'm glad to hear that. That's the most important thing, that tiebreaker.
Tiebreaker. I would take that tiebreaker over the goal differential tiebreaker any day.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree with you right there. But what about Raimondo? I mean, like, Raimondo had a great match. You know, he held on as much as he could. What did you expect from him every single time he's on the field, not just in MLS play, but in this International Cup competition?
Well, the great thing he does, he between himself, Olave, and Borchers, those guys can organize the defense so well, and they've been playing so much together in so many years that I'm always confident with those three plus, you know, Beltran and Wingert to always play within what they can do and not extend themselves and then play good defense. Those five players together have been playing together since 2009. So that cohesion is what sets us apart in all competitions, whether it be MLS or CONCACAF. It'll be sad when we have to break up this group. So I'm going to enjoy it while I can, especially with the Borchers, Olave, and Raimondo. Those guys have been fantastic to watch through these last 3 or 4 years.
Absolutely. And once again, Jason Christ is going to have a lot on his hands if you're going to break up this group once. I mean, who's ready to come and take over for some of these guys through the RSL pipeline, the reserves or the youth academies? Who's ready to go? Who's ready to take over?
Well, defensively, I have no clue. I know Mensali is a good pickup. He's a young guy from New England that we picked up earlier this year. Watson Cerebu is a physical specimen. I think he can fill in for the middle. I think we keep Beltran and Winger for another couple years. They're still relatively young. As far as the midfield is concerned, I know that we picked up a guy from, I think, Portugal, a 20-year-old midfielder, creative attacking midfielder. So I can't remember his name, but I can see what they're doing. They've got Gil in the system. They've got this new guy in the system. Sebastian Velasquez made an appearance on Tuesday. So they're just slowly trying to get more guys through. And, I mean, it'll be an interesting offseason. I don't want to think about it just yet, but we're going to make some changes this year, and it's going to be sad because we're going to lose some of the players we've had here for a long time.
Oh, definitely. I understand where you're coming from. And unfortunately, sometimes change can be a good thing. But once again, you know, especially in the Champions League, you know, you're going to have to fight really hard for a place to play in this International Cup competition, of course. And taking a look at the standings once again, both Herediano and Salt Lake tied for 6 points each. Currently, Herediano scoring 2, allowing nothing. But you've scored 3 and allowed 1, and that 1 you allowed was to Herediano. You know, the differential by both you guys are a +2. Taro has already been eliminated, obviously. They're at the -4 with no points on the differential. It just seems to me like the next game, next week, I'm assuming you're hoping for a draw because that's the only way, not to say you can't win it, but it depends on how many goals they're going to put past Taro. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and again, if they get the draw, that's better for us. But I don't care how many goals they get past Taro, because it will come down to how many goals RSL can get past Herediano. If it's 1-0, then they'll win them the next tiebreaker, which is that ultimate group goal differential. But if we win 2-0, we win because we've got that goal differential between the two clubs, between the two of us. We win that tiebreaker. So I'm not worried about the Taro FC match. I would like for Taro to beat or draw Herediano. But if it doesn't happen, I'm confident that RSL will come away with at least a 2-goal win here at Rio Tinto in Salt Lake City and move on. I'm that confident. I can say right now I think we move on.
Okay, good. No, look, as long as you're confident.
If
Sabo's healthy. Well, listen, if you feel confident and, you know, Scott feels confident and Dez feels confident, I'll feel confident. That's fine.
Yeah, we feel confident. How's that?
Okay, see, now you're speaking for everybody. You can't do that.
Yes.
But, boy, oh, boy. But, no, but seriously, though, listen, look, I mean, you know, you want to see Salt Lake do well. Obviously, before this whole tournament got started, I mean, even I thought they were probably one of the odds-on favorites to get to the final again this year, but or in this tournament. And now, To me, it looked like a struggle, but if you feel confident that they're going to go forward, then good to hear. What are you going to do when Herediano does come to Rio Tinto? Because obviously this is going to be probably the biggest match in the season for Salt Lake right now. What do they have to do? We know they got to put goals past them, but what about Herediano that gave you worries the first time you saw them against Salt Lake down in Costa Rica?
Nothing big surprised, you know. There's nothing they did that really shocked me. It was just a good battle when we were down there, and they had we got the red card, and that red card changed the aspect of the game definitely. However, they're not taking this game lightly either. They signed a couple of Argentine forwards over the last couple of weeks before the window closed. So that's what's going to surprise me is how much they're going to go for this as well. I think this has a chance of being a very wide open game at the end of October when these two clubs meet. I wasn't really concerned. I was sad we lost that game the first game, but I wasn't concerned because I thought we played well even when we were down to 10 men. But going forward, I know we'll fill the stadium. We filled the stadium every time we've had a Champions League game since the last one. And we did it two times this year, and we did it the last time we played. So we're going to fill the stadium. I know Jason Christ will press, and I know the team will know what they need to do. That's why I feel so confident. I know that the team will respond, and we'll get those two goals and hold them to, either if they get a goal, we'll get the third goal. I'm very confident we'll get that goal differential, and everything will work in our favor.
You're lucky I like you.
You don't see it that way?
No, I'm talking about because you had to help your wife.
Oh, no, dude, I am so sorry.
No, that's
life
okay.
Life happens, man.
It's all right. Listen, I understand. You tell your wife, I understand. It's not a big deal. Now, that's why I make sure I have an extra 15 minutes just to try and save your rear end. That's why I'm here. But
Thank you very, very, very much. Thank you. I'm so sorry I put you in the mind earlier today.
No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. But listen, well, hopefully for Salt Lake that they will get through this. And, of course, then that match will be in October at Rio Tinto. I'm expecting probably a good crowd at Rio Tinto that night because, this is basically for all the marbles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last one, even against Taro FC, the last game we had here for Champions League, is 20,000 people there. I mean, it was a packed stadium, the crowd. And the funny thing about this game, the Champions League games, the crowd is more intense. I mean, it's a fierce environment because we know it's a playoff type of atmosphere. So I am, based on past performance, I know it's not indicative of future returns, but I, based upon our ability to fill a stadium with these games, and it's a Tuesday night, I'm confident we're going to have a rowdy, ruckus, full stadium that will support. I mean, that's just going to lift the guys so much.
That's awesome. Chris, have a good night. Thanks for coming in and filling in for all
Thanks
the
for
problems
having...
that happened. No
Thanks
problem
for...
at all.
Thanks for having me late, I appreciate it.
No problem at all. Have a good luck with the rest of the season. Good luck with that final group game.
All right, thank you, Daniel. I'll call you after the game, of course.
Okay, great. That's Chris Enger, ladies and gentlemen, from the RSL show. And there you are. You felt confident. There was a lot of humidity down in Panama. I guess that's why they weren't so used to it. But, we'll see what happens and all that stuff. And, it's just one of those things that does happen. But once again, that answered my question about Salt Lake. That answered my question about how they performed. And, if they feel confident that this is going to be a victory, then they feel confident it's a victory. So there you go. Nothing more, nothing less. And as we finish up here on the CONCACAF Champions League group stage review show, of course, this was week four, round four, as we quickly take a look here. Once again, Seattle, probably also Santos Laguna, you have to give them the automatic spots for the knockout stage. There's still a lot of jockeying for position with these final 2 weeks. There's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching, obviously. But it's just one of those things where, this is why they made the changes. Obviously, it was more for flying back and forth with a lot of flights here and there, of course. But that's the things that you got to handle. Thanking once again my guests, Warren Jones, Adrian Whitbread, Adam Serrano, Dave Clark, John Jagu, and the late arriving Chris Enger. Don't forget next week, 1 hour show, only Toronto and Puerto Rico. along with John Jagu. So it's going to be a torch week. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show coming up on Tuesday, September 25th. Good night, everybody.